This is Basketball U.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago on FM 100.3 HD2, the ESPN Chicago app, and ESPN 1000.
Single Sunday throughout the NCAA tournament. Tyler Rocky and Shay Norling, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. every single Sunday right here on ESPN 1100.3 HD2. Don't forget, you can also watch the show on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. We have seen some fantastic basketball. There have been the upsets of all upsets. We saw already two number one seeds go down. We'll get to Kansas a little bit later on, unless we're getting a call from upstairs from Danny saying we're not allowed to talk Kansas today.
Has anybody done the wellness check on Zetterman?
Should we do that? Let's do that.
We should do that on the air. Yeah.
We'll do that a little bit later on. And then Purdue. And this has been we've struck a chord in West Lafayette, Shay. God forbid we expect a program that has been a 1-3 and a 4 seed to go out and beat a 13, a 15, and a 16 seed. God forbid we want a program to do that. And we've got some Boiler fans that are not happy with us.
Well, are they not happy with us, or are they not happy with Matt Painter? David Goldcoast wasn't happy with us, but he was an IU fan. Mm-hmm. I'm actually glad we fired up Purdue Nation, because look, you shouldn't be happy with what Matt Painter's given you. You should be a little upset with what Purdue has done in the past few tournaments, and where you make the Sweet 16 and you finally get that second weekend after the Elite Eight berth where Carson Edwards got hot and went crazy, and you make the second weekend and you lose to St. Peter's. And that was with Jaden Ivey, who was a top five pick in the draft. And then this year, obviously, going out as the second team in history to lose to a 16 seed, the biggest upset in tournament history, with a guy who could be the player of the year in Zach Edey. Mm-hmm. Like, in our last hour before we went to break, a caller brought up, it just feels like Painter doesn't get creative. It feels like Painter doesn't adapt. I agree with that. Every trip down the floor, it feels like the same thing. Edey post up, collapse the defense, mm-hmm. but if he ends up with two defenders on his backside, he's going to be able to go up. Otherwise, kick it out for an open three. It's always the same kind of trip, and it's asking a lot of usage out of a guy who is massive. And honestly, at the end of games, he looks gassed pretty often. So yeah. I kind of see, you shouldn't be happy with Matt Painter if you're a Purdue fan. And I'm glad we're hearing from some people who aren't.
Matt is in Crown Point. What's up, Matt?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So you have a coach like Matt Painter, who is rightfully so a good recruiter, gets a lot of credit. But I think it's a lot on him. The freshman guards that did that played in the tournament this year, there is potential. But you look at a guy like Hood Schifino down in IU, there's freshmen out there that are better. So it's on Painter to go get those guys. It's great that he develops big guys, but you need that 1-2 punch. We look at last year. That was, I think, as a Purdue fan, our time to win it, because we had a NBA guard. We had Travion, I forget his last
Travion
name.
Williams.
And then we also, and we had Ede. We had more pieces last year. This was a flawed team. We got called on our bluff. We had a big guy. They shut him down, had no response. But the way he used Ivy last year and just let him run wild, and they didn't really run much of an offense in the tournament. It seemed like it was like it made you think about his coaching. So I want to see what you guys thought about
that. And I think, Matt, you bring up the run with Jaden Ivey last year. Like, that last possession where Ivey had to go out and just, I don't know if a play was drawn up. I literally think it was Jaden Ivey, go hit a three for us to try to keep our season alive, and he didn't. Mm-hmm. Like, that's to me what I saw last year. And that team had all the talent in the world. Like, they were a three seed, but that team would have been a one seed this year if they had even without Edey playing as well as Edey is now. Like, let's say we had last year's version of Edey, who was 7'4" and on the rise to becoming a star. Like, Travion Williams, that's one of the best passing bigs we've seen in the sport in the last like 20-25 years. Jaden Ivey, top five pick. Like, if you couldn't win with that team last year and you couldn't beat a 15 seed, like, that was the team that had the chance to get to the Final Four there.
The path was built for you.
Oh, my goodness.
It was set up perfectly for Purdue to finally make it and just couldn't get it done. It to that, like you mentioned, to me, That team with Ivy, that's the one that I look back at and go, if they weren't going to make the Final Four then, and now you lose with Edie this year, you ain't making the Final Four with Matt Painter.
Like, I don't know what's the... I hate to say it, but, like, I don't know what's the more egregious loss. Is it that one or the loss to St. Peter's? Like, the St. Peter's loss was... That was a team that looked like it was just... It walked into the gym and said, oh, we've got more talent than this team, so we're going to go out. Like, I don't know what's the more egregious coaching job. Between
doesn't it feel like it was kind of the same thing on Friday night though too, where they just kind of showed up and were like, we're gonna beat this team, not a big deal, and then they get into a game and a rock fight and Painter doesn't know what to do because the only plays he runs are Edie post-ups. It's just, it's so much of the same that you, and you mentioned like the, hey, Jaden, take the ball, shoot a three, if we make it then we stay alive. That is what it felt like. It feels like he's a guy who's not doing any coaching, really. He does the recruiting. He leans on the strengths with Edie and then just lives off of that. There's no real adapting in game. They don't change the game plan much. Mm-hmm. It's just, he feels stubborn, and it feels like it's a team that's not going to go much further than they have.
And I think it sort of ties into what the Big Ten in general and why they have so much difficulty in the NCAA tournament. It's because it is a big man's league, and when you get into the NCAA tournament, you're playing a guards game. Like, it's almost like you're taking football players and throwing them into a basketball tournament. That's what you're doing with the Big Ten, it feels like, every single year. And we're on the like, potentially today, the Big Ten could be out of the tournament. They could have zero second weekend teams if Marquette and if Miami win today, which is certainly not out of the question of either of those happening.
Yeah, Marquette's a favorite, and Miami, I think, a half point. It's something very, it's a coin flip. It's two coin flip games today, and if the Big Ten loses both, then yeah, it's another year where you get eight teams in and tout yourself as one of the best conferences in America, but all eight teams are gone by weekend two, including your number one seed. It feels like a lot of the same. And I think a part of it, Tyler, is, like we mentioned, the conference hasn't won a national title since Michigan State in 2000. I think since then, only Michigan State and Michigan are the teams that have even made it to national title games.
Yeah.
It feels like there's no pro talent in this conference, or very little. Mm-hmm. And when there is, even Izzo, even the great coaches don't necessarily know what to do with it. Like, the most talented Michigan State team was probably 2018 with Jaren Jackson and Miles Bridges,
right,
and they lost in the second round.
In a home game.
To you.
Yeah. I remember that. Like, it's one of those things where sometimes you see a coach try to adapt their strategy and it sometimes comes in and bites them in the ass.
Yeah. So I think when we look at the Big Ten, like, Purdue is almost a microcosm of what this conference is. Is it time? You are obviously an ACC guy. You went to Syracuse. Me as a Michigan State fan, I watch a lot of Big Ten basketball, and I think people in Chicago watch a lot of Big Ten basketball. Is it time, if you watch the Big Ten, that you have to just accept we're not going to win a national championship? Like, this is kind of the same deal as football. We're not going to compete with the SEC. We're not going to compete with the Big 12. We might get on par with the ACC in years like this where the conference is down a little bit, but as a conference, we're not going to pull the pro talent that the Pac-12 and the Big 12 and the SEC get. We don't have the attractive destinations. We have coaches, I think, across the board who operate in an old school way and don't want to get involved in the transfer portal, don't want to get involved too much in the NIL stuff. As a conference, it just kind of feels like this is it. We're not going to win a national championship. We're going to be content to have a bloodbath regular season, hang a banner for a regular season champion, hang a banner for a tournament champion, and then watch all eight of our tournament teams go home in the first three rounds.
I'll say no to that, because there's one team that I think could be built for something, and they're starting to get back on the rise here, and that's Indiana. I think the path that Mike Woodson, and again, I don't think Woody's the greatest X's and O's guy out there, but I think the players love playing for him. He's done a really good job in recruiting so far, and he's done a really good job in talent retention as well. I mean, the fact that Trace Jackson Davis got not one but two seasons with Mike Woodson is stellar in and of itself. And I think Mike Woodson could be the one that brings the Big Ten a title. Because I think he could do the recruiting part, and he could go out and get that mega star. Like, he could get their Brandon Miller. I think Indiana is probably the only program in the Big Ten that could sell that right now.
It's just such a big question to me, because like, if I'm a five-star kid and I've got an offer from Indiana and I've got an offer from, honestly, someplace warm, or I've got an offer from like UCLA,
Alabama.
It, right now with Nate Oates, barring Nate Oates leaving, which I don't think he's going to do this offseason. No. I'm just saying, like, in the future, that's a program on the rise that may just stick around as a basketball powerhouse. You have the best football program, or probably now the second best football program in the country. That's a huge recruiting tool. Mm-hmm. Then you add in, hey, we're a basketball program on the rise, and we've got a really great coach who's young and ready to go. Like, that's where I kind of think the Big Ten's going to struggle. A lot of the coaches are older. The recruiting feels outdated. The pro talent we do get is one and gone, and they don't win. It's just a lot of the pro talent we get is also second-round picks in this conference. Like, we're not getting lottery talent. And when we do, it's like I mentioned, it's Miles Bridges and Jaren Jackson going out in the second round. It's Jaden Ivey going out in the Sweet 16 to St. Peter's. It's a lot of early exits. Like, if I'm a pro kid, a five-star kid, I'm looking more at Texas. I'm looking more at Bama, UCLA, places that, one, are warm, two, are storied, three, have young, kind of exciting vibes about them. I don't
Duke
see
and
that
Carolina,
in the Big
too,
time.
I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah. I think that Mike Woodson, with his NBA background, too, because, like, a lot of these kids, what's the goal, right? Get to the next level. Get me there as quick as you can as well. And Woodson's got the NBA ties to the league from his time as a head coach with the Knicks. And I think also the management of kids making money too. Like, I think Woodson is one of the coaches that is best equipped to handle egos. And it's because of that NBA background. It's why if Billy Donovan were to come back into the college ranks, I think he would be unbelievable at it, because he knows how to manage some ego. And he's also, I think, college-wise, he's a great recruiter. One of the best recruiters that you'll find.
What's going to be interesting, too, with Indiana is if they are getting some pro talent, you look at Jalen Hood-Scafino, can they get these kids to stay? Because now you have, there is an opportunity with the NIL. It used to be with the one and done, you get the pro level kid, the five-star type kid, they're gone, and there's nothing you can do about it. Now with the NIL, can you retain some of this talent?
We're in all likelihood going to see the player of the year stick in the sport for the second straight season. With Oscar Tshiebwe last year, and then this year, I'm guessing we'll see it with Zach Edey.
It's a different game now, because you can make money in college. There's no race to get to the NBA anymore.
All right. Tyler Aki, Shane Norling, 312-332-3776. If you want to jump on into the conversation, we may try to do a wellness check with Danny Zetterman coming up next. All right? We'll give him a call, see how he's doing.
That's a good idea.
This is Basketball U on ESPN 1000.
This is ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Basketball U.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago on FM 100.3 HD2, the ESPN Chicago app, and ESPN 1000.
So we've spent a lot of the show today talking about the one seed that fell, the Purdue Boilermakers, in mega upset fashion, losing to Fairleigh Dickinson, just the second time ever we've seen a one seed fall in the first round of the NCAA tournament. The other one seed that lost is the Kansas Jayhawks. They fall to Arkansas. They had a double-digit lead on the Hogs, and then, what do you know, all of a sudden Arkansas catches a little bit of fire. And they come back and they pull off the small upset. It was a 3.5 point, 3.5 point line heading into that one. But you know, Eric Musselman, he takes the shirt off. It's good times. Woo pig suey, right? Like,
what was that about, by the way? I mean, the shirt off.
It's his thing. He does it all the time.
The must bus is a convertible.
I love it. I love it. And listen, like, Eric Musselman, I feel like, is one of those coaches who I don't think gets enough credit for the tournament success that he has. And he shows once again as he finds himself in the second weekend, and he's just, it feels like Arkansas is one of those teams every single year when they're, especially when they're a high seed, not as much this year because they were an 8 seed, but every single year the Arkansas Razorbacks feel like the trendy pick to lose early, like as a 4 seed, and he just doesn't. And Eric Musselman, even going back to when he was at Nevada, I thought he was, I mean, he did the whole transfer portal thing there, and he got, it was just import after import after import with him. And it was a really good showing for Eric Musselman, but the Arkansas Razorbacks go out and put together a fantastic comeback victory here on the heels of what they got from Ricky Council, as well as Devontae Davis, each with over 20 points.
Yeah, and I think the other part of this, too, and on the Kansas side of things, it's a 3.5-point line. I think it would have been a larger spread if Bill Self had been the coach in the game. It's something I always look at. Like, you remember probably very well. I think it was 2014, 2015. There was a stretch of games. Syracuse had a good team. Mm-hmm. Jim Boeheim missed a rather long stretch of games. And during that stretch, Syracuse played very poorly. Not having your coach in the college game can be a huge factor in whether or not you win or lose. Like, that's why I think with Purdue, it's kind of obvious. Matt Painter blew a huge game again. With Kansas, it's a little more nuanced, because I think if Bill Self had been on that sideline, they don't lose yesterday.
Right.
Like, if Bill Self is coaching in that game, Kansas is still playing. Bill Self didn't coach in that game, and he's having health issues, and we wish him the best. Mm-hmm. But you lost the game, and it just kind of is what it is.
The surprising thing to me also was just that you didn't see a lot of Grady Dick, because like, he is one of those guys who I thought you'd see a Grady Dick outing and it just kind of takes you on a little tourney run, right? And he only shot the ball 3 times from distance. He finishes with 7 points. The starters played well for Kansas. The one problem with this team is that they didn't have a lot of depth. And I don't think that depth is the be-all, end-all either. I think that you can win without depth. We saw Villanova do it time and time again. You don't necessarily need depth, but you need more than 5 guys. And because if one of those 5 guys is off, then you're in for a little bit of trouble here. All right, should we do this?
Let's get the wellness check-in.
Danny Zetterman, our director of content, our fine, fine director of content, and noted Kansas Jayhawk fan, now joins us on Basketball U on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline. Danny, the floor is yours, my friend. How are you doing? Are you doing all right?
Guys, everything's great. What could possibly be wrong today on this beautiful Sunday? You two are on the air, sounding great. The sun is shining. Well, what could possibly be bad?
Okay, but how are you really feeling, Danny?
Are you trying to get me to talk about Kansas?
Yeah,
I heard you talking about Grady Dick. Did he play yesterday? Was he there?
36 minutes, but didn't do a lot.
He did absolutely nothing. Listen, I'm not heartbroken. I'm very upset. Obviously, I would have liked my Kansas Jayhawks to win the game. Up 12 points, I thought for sure going into halftime they were going to win the game. The problem was Bill Self wasn't there. When you have, and you guys will not disagree with me, right now he is a top 3 active coach in NCAA basketball.
Yeah,
I agree with you, but I didn't want to sound biased. But when you have one of the top coaches in basketball out, what do you think is going to happen? They were up 12 points. They gave up the lead. KJ Adams got in foul trouble. That didn't help them. McCullough got in foul trouble. That didn't help them. Grady Dick was absolutely nowhere to be seen. We're playing Clements all these minutes. The kid barely played all season, and here he is in a major tournament game playing. It didn't go the way we needed it to go.
Yeah, and I mentioned to Tyler, like, my big thing with it was, if Bill Self's on the sideline, you're a bigger than 3.5-point favorite, and you're still playing. So I was wondering how much that factors into you being kind of okay with this, because it's like, obviously the biggest thing is Bill Self's got to be okay. The health issues stick out. If he'd been there, you're still playing. Just, it kind of feels like it is what it is. He wasn't there, and you blew the lead.
It's an interesting conversation how much a coach has an effect on a college basketball game. I would say, so going into the game, before it was official that Bill Self wasn't going to play, Kansas was -5.5, some places -5. Then when it came out he wasn't going to be there, they were -3.5. So Bill Self accounts for 2 points. I think he accounts for more than that when you take one of the best coaches in basketball off the sideline. Up 12 points, they don't blow that lead if he was there. So last night, a bunch of my friends were texting me, a bunch of guys I went to college with, we were talking on the phone, like, we're not that upset, because let's be honest, if one of your best players was out in the tournament, you'd expect to lose. Maybe not in the second round if you're a number one seed, but you don't expect to cut down the nets. Without Bill Self, I take the loss with a grain of salt.
So you're not upset. You're good to go.
I'm upset. You know what? I'm upset. I was watching the game with my kids. My son Avery was fully bought in. My 9-year-old.
I was going to ask about Avery.
I was too. Yeah. That was my next question.
That was the most heartbreaking part because, like, I get it, and I know the coach wasn't there, and I know you can't cut down the nets every year. As much as I say Kansas is going to win every year, I know it doesn't happen that way. But when you're a 9-year-old kid and you see Kansas Jayhawks, your favorite team, and there's a number one in front of them, you don't think they're going out to a number eight. And he can't get over the rankings, right? He's like, oh, number eight, for sure we're going to win. For sure this is an easy one. So I felt really bad for him because now you've got to wait another 12 months to do it again.
Is this one of the most devastating losses in his life?
Oh, that's a good question. I would think, yeah, because, like, think of the teams he's fans of. He hasn't suffered any devastating losses with the Bears. You know, when the Cubs won the World Series, he was 3 years old. And then, you know, the decline came after that. He wasn't old enough to be into sports. The Sox season was rough for him last year because he thought the Sox were going to make a run for the World Series, probably because I kept saying they're going to make a run for the World Series and they didn't. But, like, he's not a huge Blackhawks fan. The Bulls have never been good in his lifetime. So I would have to say, yeah, that's a good question, Tyler, but I think, yeah.
I remember when they lost to TCU in the regular season, you said Avery had a really difficult time with it. So I was keeping Avery in my thoughts last night.
Well, thank you for that, Shay. I appreciate it. Yeah, listen, when you're a little kid, you don't, like, when you're the number one seed or you're the team that dominates and you watch almost every game, he watched almost every game with me, and then you see them blow a 12-point lead, it's mind-boggling to him. You know, like, how does this happen? How can we do this? What's going on?
Yeah. All right, Danny.
By the way, Grady Dick, I know you're listening because you're big fans of Tyler and Shay. Like, dude, you better come back to Kansas. Don't even think of going in the draft. If you couldn't show up yesterday against the Arkansas Razorbacks, you got no shot in the NBA, buddy.
I love the plea. That can't be your final performance, Grady. It can't be.
No. And listen, and they couldn't make free throws. Like, we're in the bonus the majority of the second half, and nobody's hitting their free throw.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's college basketball.
Mm-hmm. The greatest thing ever, the 1-1. Danny, sorry to bother you on a Sunday. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next year when Kansas loses.
Why did you have to do that, Mr. Syracuse? How'd your team do in the tournament?
I had no expectation.
Did they make it, Tyler?
They did not.
Did Jim Boeheim get anyone else fired this weekend? Moving on with his
life? No, he got a job. He got a job in the athletic department.
I'm
cooked, Danny. Like, I may join you. I may become a Kansas fan.
It's funny. One of my good buddies, Matt Chango, texted me on Friday night when Purdue lost. And he goes, hey, can you send me a link for some Kansas gear? I think I'm changing allegiances. And then I texted him last night. I'm like, hold off on ordering the Kansas gear, buddy.
Oh, boy.
Maybe all three of us will be down a team by the end of the day.
Yeah.
No, we're all rooting for you, Shay.
Yeah, yes,
thanks,
we are.
Danny. Appreciate that.
All right, Danny. We'll talk to you later.
All right, boys. Be good.
All right. Danny's taking it all right.
You know, he brings up a good point about being a little kid, though. I remember, like, when the national championship, when Michigan State played North Carolina in Detroit, and I was young at the time. I think I was 15 years old. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting down to watch it with my dad. And even at 15, I didn't know as much as I know now. And I was kind of like, Michigan State, 2 seed, up against North Carolina. This will be tough, but it's in Detroit. It's a home game. We're going to win this, no problem. And only now, looking back, do I realize nobody thought Michigan State was going to win that game. That was the buzzsaw North Carolina team.
It's always like there's certain games where you lose, like, your college basketball innocence, right? Like, you start to learn. And I know exactly what mine is. It is when Georgetown lost to Florida Gulf Coast. I think that's when I truly found how magical this tournament is. And I remember, too, like, the George Mason run, what was that, in 2006, want to say? The George Mason run is certainly another one of those formative moments of March Madness in my lifetime. But, like, for young Avery Zetterman here, like, I mean, he's going to have to stick with this Kansas loss for a while here. Like Danny said, the worst part about this, when you've got a team as good as Kansas is, and unfortunately there's a circumstance that happens late in the season that kind of forbids them from moving on in the tournament here, but now you got to wait another 12 months for this, and you don't know what the pieces are going to look like when we get to this time next year.
That is, there's so much brutality that comes with a tournament loss because you wait all year for this and the odds of winning it are so exponentially set against you. Yeah. Even if you're a 1 seed, it feels like the odds of actually winning this are so against you, and yet the loss is like, it's like a knife to the heart, because it's the one game, you're done. Like you mentioned, the formative moment. The ones that stick out for me are Butler as an 11 seed going to the national title game, the Kemba Walker run with UConn, and then Duke losing to Mercer. Those are the ones that really stick out as like, this is a magical thing. But then when I'm on the flip side of it and Michigan State loses to Middle Tennessee State, it ain't magic. I'll tell you that, that's pain.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, you brought up Duke there. They lost yesterday to Tennessee. We've talked a little Tennessee, but I do want to talk about Duke, because that is one of the bigger losses we've seen in this tournament so far. We'll get to Duke when we come back here. Tyler Aki, Shea Norling, it's Basketball U on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
This is Basketball U.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago, on FM 100.3 HD2, the ESPN Chicago app, and ESPN 1000.
We are underway on this Sunday, the last batch of second round games. Right now, Xavier all over Pitt. 15 point advantage here with 14 and a half minutes to go. So it appears for now like the Xavier Musketeers will be moving on to face Texas. We've got a great slate of games going on later today as well. We'll do like some quick hitting thoughts through all of those coming up in about 10 minutes here. But we do have something from yesterday that needs to be brought up, and that is the Duke Blue Devils getting blown out by Tennessee in John Shire's first tournament as the head coach of the Duke Blue Devils. And you can't say it any other way. Like, this was a beyond successful year, I think, for John Shire, even though they didn't get to the second round. You lose to a Tennessee team that was a better seed than you, but I don't think was necessarily the better team. And ultimately, this team just, they didn't have the, I don't know the best way to put it, but like, we mentioned how part of why we had faith in Duke making a run here in the NCAA tournament was because the five stars were starting to play like five stars finally. And in this game, the five stars weren't playing like five stars. And I mean, Derek Lively is a fantastic player, but you can't have a guy who is the number one player in the country and not take a single shot in the game. He impacted the game in many other ways. And to me, like Derek Lively, it almost reminds me a little bit of Joakim Noah in the way that he can impact games defensively and be a star in the sport. But you can't have the number one recruit in the country not shoot the basketball once for you. As a seven-footer, there has to be some sort of lob opportunities, ability to get some offensive rebounds and easy putbacks there, and there was none of that for Lively in this game.
Yeah, they got beat badly on the offensive glass. They got out-rebounded overall, which was shocking, frankly, to see.
With a pair of seven-footers out there at all times.
That's where I thought this Duke team with Kyle Filipowski, and obviously he didn't shoot the ball well yesterday, 0 of 5 from 3. Tyrese Proctor, 1 of 5. This also isn't a Duke team that shoots well from 3. This was kind of always going to be, if they were going to lose, it would be because they got down early and they had to fight their way back into a game. And once Tennessee in the final 10 minutes really started to open things up, it just felt like Duke never had a prayer, because they're coming down the floor and launching threes, which is not their strength to begin with. It felt like a bad day. Like, you bring up Derek Lively making an impact on the defensive glass, but only 2 offensive boards. He's not crashing well. He's not limiting Tennessee's possessions. He's not giving his team second chances. So that's where I started getting concerned with Duke when I was watching it. And like we mentioned, the freshmen finally starting to play like five-star freshmen. Well, it ran out yesterday. Yeah. And that's a little bit of what happens. And maybe that was on us trusting this team too much. I went back and looked. Teams that really overperform in the end stretch of the season relative to how they played to start the year, typically are underwhelming in the tournament. Mm-hmm.
Look at Arizona, I think, is another example of that.
Yeah, but didn't it feel like the path was built so well for Duke, where you get a Tennessee team that's not healthy, that's down their best player, you go up against a coach in Rick Barnes who is historically a first-round exit. This is only his eighth trip to the Sweet 16 in his career, mm-hmm. and he's been coaching for 40 years. So it felt like the path was made for John Shire and Duke to get this done, and instead they got run out of the gym yesterday by Tennessee.
And I think that this is a Duke team that it was a good first year for Shire, but ultimately, like, it's on to next season now. They've got the second best recruiting class. They're bringing in five stars for next season. So we'll see how many of these guys end up going to the NBA draft. Wouldn't shock me to see a few of them come back as well, and this could be a Duke team that's loaded up and ready to go once again next year.
And maybe that's part of it too, is at a five, maybe were they a little overseeded? Like, it's possible because of the way that they finished the season, winning the ACC tournament, getting hot, winning so many of those games in a row. We talked about the win streak should have been longer. They got screwed against Virginia mm-hmm. in that loss. Doesn't it feel like maybe at a five they were a little higher seeded than they should have been based on how they played throughout the season? And maybe the expectations just got too high. By no means is this a failure for John Shire. You brought up the shoes you have to fill coming in after Coach K leaves. To have the ability to recruit at the level that he did, to be continuing to recruit at the level that he is, and to win the ACC tournament, that's a massively successful year. He didn't need a Final Four berth. It would have been awesome, but
yeah.
He didn't need that.
No, he didn't need that. I think that in terms of were they underseeded, overseeded, if anything, I think they may have been a little underseeded, because they were running through teams down the stretch to close out the year. And they were dominant start to finish in the ACC tournament as well. I think that the ACC and just the ACC being down this year was something that probably hurt them. And seeing how they exit the NCAA tournament and also knowing how the ACC was as a whole this season, it feels like five was probably the proper seed for them.
So another thing I'm thinking of now, too, with Duke on the outs, and we look at who's left in this tournament, which we talked a little bit about in the first hour, who should be the favorite. We are lacking for blue bloods, Tyler.
Yes. Kentucky.
Yeah, Kentucky's in there. UCLA. Is Indiana a blue blood?
Yes, yes, Indiana's a blue blood. Mm-hmm.
So we're down to what, three? Maybe you want to count Michigan State. I wouldn't. Maybe you do. Like, I treat mm-hmm. them as a blue blood, but I don't think most people would. UConn, I guess, if you want to get into it. But really, it's like the storied powerhouse programs. It's UCLA and Kentucky. And that kind of just speaks to the chaos that we've seen in this first weekend.
And some of those teams could be on the outs, too. Like, Kentucky still has to play today. UConn
Kansas
still
State.
Has to play today. You mentioned Indiana. They still have to play today. So, yeah, there could be just the one. It could just be UCLA. And, like, you've got these new bloods in the thick of things now. Alabama and Houston. And these are Texas. Like, these are untraditional basketball programs that are finally having some success. And it's good to see. I think it's good for the sport, too. I think it's good for how you're seeing the sport kind of spread itself out, where you've got Brandon Miller, who's going to be the first NBA college player taken off the board, and he's at Alabama. If you told me the list of schools remaining and what school he's at, I would have said, oh, Kentucky. Like, he has to be at Kentucky. No, he's at a different school, not just a different school in the conference that Kentucky resides in as well.
Well, maybe that's the future of the sport a little bit, is you go to the school. Like, Alabama has a lot of advantages other schools don't have in terms of NIL and boosters. Mm-hmm. Do you start going to the school that you can make the most money at? Like, now we look next year, Kentucky's got five of the top 20 recruits. Duke's got five stars coming in. Michigan State's up there. But then, like, fifth, it's Memphis. And we all know with Penny and Memphis, they like to throw the bag around a little bit. So are we starting to see a shift in the sport where if you have power boosters who are willing to pay, you don't have to be a blue blood name to land some of these guys?
Like, you look at the schools that are still standing right now, Alabama, football school. Houston, I'd classify, if you had to pick one, football school. Arkansas, football school. Tennessee, football school.
Texas,
football school. The only ones that, like, UCLA is not a football school. UCLA is a basketball school. And then San Diego State, I'd lean football school. Like, they've had success as a football program, but like
it's a school school.
It's a school. It's a school for books, right? But like I would say that like you look at the teams that have advanced through to the second weekend here so far, and even like okay, let's say Miami wins football school. Xavier's going to move on their basketball school. The St. Mary's UConn, they're basketball schools. But like if TCU beats Gonzaga, football school.
So it's interesting too how many of these teams don't even have Division I football. Like Gonzaga,
right.
it's becoming really just kind of an interesting time for the sport where you see UConn, a school mm-hmm. that didn't have a football program until like 6 years ago.
Let's be honest, they still don't.
Well, they had a nice year this year, six wins. Yeah, it was a little above expectation, but they have the fourth best recruiting class coming in mm-hmm. next season.
Yeah. And like, listen, they play, they don't play in a conference though, which is ultimately, I think what hurts them too, from getting any sort of notoriety on the football side of things. But yeah, you're starting to see it. It's a changing of the guard right now within, college basketball where you're seeing these football schools with a lot of money poured into the athletic programs. They're the ones that are starting to come out on top and emerge as strong contenders. All right, when we come back, we're going to do a quick hitting preview of all the games that we still have left for today. That's coming up next. Tyler Rocky, Shane Norling, this is Basketball U.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
This is Basketball U.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago on FM 100.3 HD2, the ESPN Chicago app, and ESPN 1000.
Thank you to Kendra Smith for producing today's show. Tyler Rocky and Shane Norling, we're with you every single Sunday throughout the NCAA tournament from 11 to 1 right here on ESPN 1000. Thanks for hanging out and listening. We riled up West Lafayette today. I'm proud of that.
Good job by us, too. I mean, you have to hold Matt Painter to the fire a little bit. When you lose, and we said it how many times, when you lose to a 13, a 15, and a 16 in back-to-back-to-back seasons, you're going to get held accountable a little bit.
Speaking of handing out some good jobs, too, Charlie Bevins, our great producer here at ESPN 1000, was one of the final 181 remaining perfect brackets. He got 21 of the first 21 picks all correct. He started 21-0 in the opening round of the NCAA tournament. Shout out to Charlie. Fantastic work. He may be hosting this show next year.
He did say he had a rough Saturday. He slipped a little mm-hmm. bit. Iowa State offset the 21 of 21, and then it's downhill from there. But still, to go 21 of the first 21 in a tournament that saw a 15 seed get or a 2 seed get bounced by Princeton, it's pretty good. Like the Furman pick, everybody was on. I'm not mm-hmm. giving him credit for that. But picking Princeton, that's impressive.
So I kind of treated his bracket like a perfect game in baseball. I didn't text him about it very often. Like I think I mentioned one time in a group chat with him in it that I was like, "Are you still perfect?" I couldn't tell. I wasn't sure yet. I didn't know what game he had. And he was still perfect. And he seemed like he was pretty open to talking about it too. Like, but I didn't want to be the one that jinxed it and him getting pissed at me for it.
He jinxed it.
Why did he jinx it?
3:30 p.m. on Friday. So you mm-hmm. and I were in 6 to 8 Friday night.
Right.
Hosting for Black and Abdallah.
Uh-huh.
And 3:30 p.m., Charlie texted me, unprompted, "If I'm perfect by the end of the Sox game, I'm calling in tonight." That was it. That
so
right
he
there.
Ruined it.
Yeah,
okay.
he cursed Iowa State's season right there.
See, here's the thing, Charlie. We were going to put you on if you were still perfect anyway. We were going to bring in Charlie. Our hope was that the Iowa State game would drag out long enough or the Sox game would go quick enough where we could put Charlie on and he would still be perfect and we could bring in someone with one of the few remaining perfect brackets. But Charlie Bevins, one of the final 181 perfect entries on ESPN's Tournament Challenge.
And there are no perfect brackets remaining, correct? At this point, I mean, when the one goes down to a 16, you can't possibly have picked mm-hmm. that and everything else correctly.
Correct, yeah. So, Charlie, well done. We may make some real estate for you on the fridge next year, too, for the bracket.
Yeah, he's going to need to be up there. 21 to 21, it's still blow. Imagine you put that in a parlay. A 21
wow,
money line parlay.
Yeah, like a daily parlay, too. Oh, wow, that would have been, he could have retired, probably.
Would have been all incredible.
Right. So we've got a bevy of games so far. On the slate for later on today. Xavier taking care of business against Pitt right now. They're on top 72-54 with about 9 minutes left to go there. Looks like the Musketeers will be moving on. Just some quick-hitting thoughts as we go through these games that are still on the slate for today. Kentucky taking on Kansas State here. Kentucky a slight favorite at 2.5 points right now. But this is a Kentucky team. They were dominant in their round one game, and I think they can do it again. Even though this is a 6-3 game where the six is favored, I like Kentucky's prospects of pulling off the win today.
I'm on the Kentucky side, but it looks like money's coming in on Kansas State. Mm. And it's one of those things, Tyler. We talked about it with Duke. The team that is massively overperforming relative to the start of the season, very rarely do they actually make the second weekend. I'd be hesitant to get on Kentucky now. Like, I'm already on them, so it is what it is. You mm-hmm. and I are riding into the night together on mm-hmm. this.
Yes.
But I'm getting a little nervous. Like, Kansas State in the bracket upstairs, I have in the final four, or not upstairs, but in one of my bracket pools.
Oh,
in
your other,
this is
your
where
other
we have
bracket?
A problem.
Okay.
My other
okay.
bracket. I do have Kansas right. State as a final four team. So we'll see what happens. But I think, like you mentioned, Kentucky's playing the way you expect a Calipari and a Kentucky team to play, especially late in the year. They lost the SEC in the SEC tournament to Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's better. Sometimes
yes.
you like we saw Penn State go out and beat Texas A&M. Sometimes it's better to get that loss out of the way and not enter too hot and over the top.
You know, we've given the Big Ten a lot of flack for their lack of tournament success. It's very possible we could see the Big 12 not have a second weekend team either.
Boy, like,
wouldn't
right that
now,
be a shock.
It is Kansas State and TCU who are both underdogs today that need to carry the mantle. The SEC has done a fantastic job, which is partially why I like Kentucky today.
And the Big 12, everybody build. Like, you had this the first weekend we did this show together, that the Big 12 is obviously a fabulous conference, but everybody was selling it a little Big 10-esque as by far the best. Mm-hmm. And now here we are in the second round, in the first weekend still, and it's two teams left. Well, three with Texas.
Yeah. So the Big 12 will have a team in the second weekend. I apologize. I'm already making my brain transition of Texas going to the SEC.
It's an there. SEC school. That's right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just means more.
Yes. Okay, next game that we've got on the slate here, Michigan State and Marquette. I know you and I are going to be super dialed into this one. But I'll say this, all right? Marquette blew Vermont out in that second half of their opening round game. But if they let Michigan State get the open three-point looks that they were given Vermont, that Vermont just was not knocking down, Marquette is not winning this game.
Here's the thing with this, like, I don't want to offer a pick because I'm too emotionally invested. What I would say as an outside observer, when you see Shaka Smart giving points to Tom Izzo in March, you probably want to go with Tom Izzo. Like, the track record recently between the two of them is remarkably similar. Izzo's been a walking first-round exit for the better part of a decade. Shaka Smart's been a walking first-round exit for a decade. It's kind of two similar stories going up mm-hmm. against one another, but Izzo's obviously got the greater track record. He's one of the better coaches in the history of college basketball. Like Danny mentioned when we did our wellness check, Bill Self's in that top three. Mm-hmm. I would say Izzo is too active.
Yes.
So I would say anytime you see Shaka Smart giving points to an Izzo Michigan State team, the Izzo squad is the way to go.
Boy, it is going to be testy in my apartment today as well, because my roommate, Danny, is a Marquette grad, big Marquette fan, huge Marquette fan. He hates that I talk down on Shaka Smart all the time. And his girlfriend, Sandy, is a Michigan State fan. So it is going to be hostile within
I like
the
Sandy.
Walls today.
Sandy's a good person.
It's going to be hostile.
Yeah,
today.
I can't imagine being involved. Well, I mentioned to you, we're going to go watch this game at a Michigan State bar. Mm-hmm. I'm bringing along my friend who is a Marquette graduate.
Yeah.
And I told him, if you want to watch this game together, I'm taking you to enemy territory. So have fun.
There's nothing like a road game. All right, St. Mary's and UConn. St. Mary's, impressive in their opening round win against
VCU.
Put
the stamp on them, Tyler.
Yeah.
I know you want to put the stamp on them.
But I like UConn.
Yeah, I know you want to hit St. Mary's with the fraud stamp. Put the label on them.
I'm not going to call them a dead team walking because I don't think they're a dead team, but I do think they are a bit of a fraud. I like UConn there. Creighton Baylor, another great 6-3 matchup that we've got on deck for today. I think this could be a game that Creighton, and they are a slight favorite in this one. I think even though they are the sixth seed here, I really like what Creighton has done this season towards the back end of the slate. Like, they had a rough 6-game losing streak back in November, December, but since then they look like one of the better teams in the sport.
And one of the kind of tips that a lot of people will tell you, if you're looking to bet on college basketball, when you see a lower ranked team favored against a higher ranked team, probably ride the Lightning and bet on the lower ranked team.
Mm-hmm. Fairleigh Dickinson getting a second crack at the tournament. They're taking on Florida Atlantic. FAU, I thought the winner of Memphis FAU was going to move on to the Sweet 16, and now that we see Fairleigh Dickinson as the opponent, I think even stronger of that.
Yeah, I think part of this, like when we saw UMBC beat Virginia, we knew they weren't going to get out of the second round. It's impossible to match the emotion and get back up. It's almost like you're on the mat. Like, you have to get back up to where you were. It's a really difficult thing to do. I can't imagine Fairleigh Dickinson goes out and wins today.
And then lastly, we've got a fantastic nightcap, Miami, Indiana, and TCU, Gonzaga. Those should both be great games. And I do think, though, that there is some potential with some of those worst-seeded teams, the 5 Miami and the 6 TCU.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested, TCU especially, because Gonzaga doesn't play any defense.
Right.
That's where I really get intrigued. Could the Big 12 stay alive some more, get 2 teams into the second weekend, TCU knocking out Mark Few?
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for us here on Basketball U. We're with you every single Sunday. If you miss anything, check out the Basketball U podcast on the ESPN Chicago app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll talk to you next Sunday.
This is ESPN Chicago.